It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
The attacker struck at 2:35 p.m. at the very heart of the UK government, where tourists from around the world gather. For sheer exposure, he picked an ideal place.
The location of this attack was no accident. The terrorists chose to strike at the heart of our capital city, where people of all nationalities, religions and cultures come together to celebrate the values of liberty, democracy and freedom of speech.
The Prime Minister had just ended her weekly questions to the House when a car veered onto the sidewalk and began mowing people down along Westminster Bridge, just yards from Big Ben. At first, some eyewitnesses thought it was just an accident.
And then as I was waiting that green light to change, the car speeded up and passed me. That small shop after the traffic light, that's the first victim hit.
The car continued towards the gates of the Houses of Parliament, just a few hundred feet away, ramming an entrance. The driver got out and ran into the courtyard driveway, where he attacked one policeman with a long knife before charging at others. They called at him to stop, then opened fire. The policeman he attacked and the terrorist himself are among the four dead, as well as a 30-year-old lady. 20 others remain in critical condition, including a party of French teenagers. A large part of surrounding London was immediately shut down in a massive police operation. The river itself was closed, and people inside Parliament locked down for many hours. Even tourists aboard the famous London Eye were stranded. ISIS propaganda has often called for its followers to carry out attacks like this, and as the terror group find themselves on the back foot in Syria and Iraq, have been calling on followers to carry out more attacks. This is also the same day that an anti-ISIS coalition of 68 foreign ministers met in D.C. to discuss the battle against them. On top of that, it's also 1 year to the day that 32 people were killed in the Brussels attacks at the airport and at the metro. And now Scotland Yard here are trying desperately to piece together who was behind today's tragedy.
All right, Benjamin Hall reporting last night on Special Report. This is Sandy Rios in the morning. The latest update we have is that the four are dead and 20 are injured, which is the same as what Benjamin said. So we'll see if that changes. I understand that people were critically wounded. The driver was driving 70 miles an hour across that bridge and just aimed for them like they have been doing in France, like the Islamists are asking their followers around the world to do, to kill innocent people when they're not expecting it. Takes this long knife, gets into the grounds of Parliament and kills this police officer who is the father, a married father of I don't know how many, but highly respected. I heard one of the members of Parliament talking about how he served with him in the military forces and how grieving he was. One girl had to jump off the bridge down into the Thames River because to avoid the driver. And let me just say that this morning now, I haven't heard this anywhere else, but someone sent this to me. Channel 4 in Britain is now claiming to have confirmation that the London attacker is Abu Izzedine. And according to this, a longstanding ally of Anjem Chowdhury. And you have to know that Chowdhury is one of the, now I don't know if he's still in London or not, but he's one of the clerics who has stirred so many to do these terrible acts. I don't know if they allow him in Britain anymore. They might, I don't know. But Chowdhury is a well-known name. He is a Londoner, and he is one of the Islamists who has stirred up so much of this terror. And someone sent me this picture. Perhaps you saw it on Facebook. And it shows a victim lying on the ground, covered in a blanket, with a woman hovering over her. Another man standing with his hands in his pockets, peering down. Another person standing with a Kleenex sort of leaning over, watching two other people standing there just watching. And That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, at least 5 people. Yeah, 5, looking at the victim, you know, trying to just do what they can. 6, I see another person kneeling at her head. While a 7th person is just walking by on their cell phone, talking. And the 7th person walking by on their cell phone talking is a woman in hijab. And this is what the picture says. A picture can say 1,000 words. Moments after the London Muslim terrorist attack, a group of people ran to help a victim. 1 didn't. So the Islamists are celebrating. There's this picture that was sent to me. It's a Publishing Gateway pundit this morning. There's a big picture of the Big Ben with the clock, and it looks like the World Trade Center with the smoke coming out, and it says, soon our battle on your land, not started yet, be upon you, only waiting. Of course, that's a translation into English by Islam, you know, Arab speakers. And ISIS is celebrating with chants of Allahu Akbar, according to tweets on this one post here. This, I guess, is also PJ Media. There's an extremist. He went out in the rain. His name is Abu Halima. He's standing in the rain ranting, and he's saying, he warned in a video 2 months before the Brussels attack, which was 1 year ago. We're going to see the black flag of Sharia in the White House. We're going to see the black flag of Sharia over Windsor Castle. We're going to see the black flag of the Khalifa on the Suez Canal. So you can see, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out what's going on. And just to make it personal, it would be as though that had just happened in the White House or on the Capitol steps, that someone had done. And don't think that they won't, and don't think that they're not trying or they're not planning it. You know, someone else also, I just saw the headline of this, so I didn't read the details of it, but someone almost breached the walls of the White House again. This is what, the 4th time in 1 week? It's shocking. It really is. So London is reeling from their own terrorist attack. They are our cousins, and I think it's particularly painful when family is attacked, and they certainly are our family. Oh, so much to tell you. Let me just interject something. I will be at First Baptist Church in Dallas this Sunday night speaking at 5:30. And for those of you down in Texas, it would be great to see you. Wonderful to have you come. 5:30. Somewhere in that huge, wonderful complex. It's called First Baptist Church right downtown in Dallas. So come and see me and let's talk. All right. So yesterday, the huge news, Devin Nunes, who is the head of the Intelligence Committee in the House, he's the Republican head of it, and he's been sort of sharing the spotlight with his Democratic counterpart for a long time, maybe too much. Well, he came out yesterday with a shocking revelation that, in fact, well, let's just hear what he has to say. We'll listen to this. This is Devin Nunes.
At our open hearing on Monday, I encouraged anyone who has information about relative topics, including surveillance on President-elect Trump or his transition team, to come forward and speak to the House Intelligence Committee. I also said that while there was not a physical wiretap of Trump Tower, I was concerned that other surveillance activities were used against President Trump and his associates. So first, I recently confirmed that on numerous occasions, the intelligence community incidentally collected information about U.S. citizens involved in the Trump transition. Details about U.S. persons associated with the incoming administration, details with little or no apparent foreign intelligence value, were widely disseminated in intelligence community reporting. Third, I have confirmed that additional names of Trump transition team members were unmasked. And fourth and finally, I want to be clear, none of this surveillance was related to Russia or the investigation of Russian activities or of the Trump team. The House Intelligence Committee will thoroughly investigate surveillance and its subsequent dissemination to determine a few things here that I want to read off. Who was aware of it? Why it was not disclosed to Congress? Who requested and authorized the additional unmasking? Whether anyone directed the intelligence community to focus on Trump associates, and whether any laws, regulations, or procedures were violated. I've asked the directors of FBI, NSA, and CIA to expeditiously comply with my March 15th letter that you all received a couple weeks ago, and to provide a full account of these surveillance activities. I informed Speaker Ryan this morning of this new information, and I will be going to the White House this afternoon to share what I know with the President and his team.
All right, that was Devin Nunez, the head of the Intelligence Committee in the House. Adam Schiff is his Democratic counterpart. Adam Schiff was very upset that Nunez should come out and make such a statement. And we're going to talk about that at greater length in the last segment. In fact, I'm going to play for you Devin Nunez's statement almost in its entirety in the Q&A session, because you're going to learn a lot more. One of the things he says is that the NSA is cooperating with the request for information, but the FBI is not. I just think that's very, very important. And the bottom line is, the allegations by President Donald Trump that someone is surveilling him, he used the word wiretap, which, again, I've explained, is an outmoded term. It's too limiting. Surveillance is much more accurate. It sounds like it's true. So just stay tuned. But nevertheless, John Roberts was there. I've told you before, John Roberts is not a friend to this White House. John is showing his stripes pretty clearly. And so when Devin Nunez finished speaking, John from Fox was kind of flummoxed and was on the scene and made a report of some sort. But I noticed a couple of hours later when he was on Special Report, he'd sort of gotten together the way he was going to tell this story. And I want you to hear how he told it. This is John Roberts on Special Report last night.
James, good evening to you. For weeks now, the White House staff has been trying to find a way out of the public relations hole President Trump dug when he tweeted out that Saturday morning that President Obama had been wiretapping him. And today, President Trump was thrown a lifeline.
The bombshell came from the House Intelligence Committee Chairman Devin Nunes, who today reported that Trump transition officials were the subject of so-called incidental collection by the intelligence agencies.
I recently confirmed that on numerous occasions, the intelligence community incidentally collected information about U.S. citizens involved in the Trump transition.
The Intercept, said Nunes, appeared to be authorized by the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. The information urgent enough that Nunes rushed over to the White House to brief the president in person. While Nunes provided no details, transition officials may have been incidentally picked up talking to foreign officials who were the actual targets of surveillance.
Yes, sir. We knew that there was some incidental collection.
Right.
Does this go beyond that?
Well, it definitely goes beyond what happened to General Flynn. Now, of course, we don't actually know yet officially what happened to General Flynn.
Nunes says the collection was legal and not tied to an investigation into Russia or any criminal investigation. What troubles him is that transition officials picked up in the surveillance were unmasked and included in intelligence reports. Michael Flynn's name was even made public, a felony.
I think the president is concerned, and he should be. I think he'd like to see these reports. And I'd hopefully when we get them, hopefully they'll get them to the White House also.
President Trump, who last week promised there would soon be evidence to back up his claims of surveillance, was asked if he feels vindicated.
I somewhat do. I must tell you, I somewhat do. I very much appreciated the fact that they found what they found, but I somewhat do.
All right, yeah, he somewhat does, as he should, but I just listen how John read that copy. You know, because I've done voiceovers so many years, when you read copy or you read a report, and I'm not reading, you know, I talk to you, I rattle things off, but when you're doing an announcer kind of thing where you enunciate, you underline certain things and you emphasize certain things. And when you're listening to that report, the way he tells it is that the president finally found a way out of the hole he had dug by his tweet. He was thrown a lifeline. Not that now, this is incredible news that there actually was. It seems as though Devin Nunez thought it was so important, but John reports it as he rushed to the White House with no details. Incidental collection, foreign conversations, and legal. These are the things that he emphasized, but I just was amazed at the way he couched it. And that's what I have to tell you. You have to really be careful who you're listening to. I think Fox, some of it's been very good, but some of it's been very bad on this. And I think John is one of the centers of being very bad. And you know that Judge Napolitano was removed from Fox a few days ago because he reported different details, but that there was surveillance. All right, when we come back, what happened with the health care bill last night? The Freedom Caucus met with the White House. What happened? We're going to see if we can find out. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
I'm a widow. I've worked for a bank for 31 years, and I've been retired now for 10 years.
Myrtle Norris comments on her experience with the AFA Foundation.
I had a lot of financial questions, and Dan Celia was, he answered my questions, and he helped me with a lot of decisions that I made. And then the charitable gift came up, and he explained that to me. I decided to get it, and I'm sure glad I did, because I know now that money is in a place that I know God wants it to be, and also get my monthly income from it. I believe in the AFA and what they're doing, because they're working for us.
Learn how the AFA Foundation can work for you. You can contact the AFA Foundation through Facebook, on our website, afafoundation.net, or call us at 800-326-4543, extension 345. Thank you for supporting the American Family Association.
From Samaritan's Purse and Franklin Graham comes Facing Darkness. In 2014, as the Ebola virus was devastating West Africa,
the numbers of new cases and deaths are still rising.
International relief organization Samaritan's Purse stepped up.
God has called us to care for the dying, to care for those that are suffering.
We can't say we're Samaritan's Purse and not help.
My phone rang. One of our doctors, Kent Brantley, has Ebola.
And then David looked at me and he said, "You too have Ebola."
We're there to save life. We're there in your name. Why?
Despite the fact that things were out of control, we knew that God was in control.
God puts you in places and supplies the strength to deal with.
Jesus Christ didn't run. We run to the fire. We don't run away from it.
Facing Darkness, a true story of faith. In select cinemas for one night only, Thursday, March 30th. For theaters and tickets, go to facingdarknessmovie.com. That's facingdarknessmovie.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with SFox News and Commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Caitlin Bird. I'm a nursing major and I'm a junior. The School of Nursing here at TMU, it's different than any other, you know, university or college out there. Every time we come into class, no matter which nursing professor it is, we always begin in devotion and prayer, and we become a family. They actually allow the students to get up and do devotion and prayer. We pray with each other and for each other, and that's just what sets us apart from any other school of nursing out there.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
A teenage boy was in the locker room at Pennsylvania's Boyertown High School last fall getting ready for gym class. The kid turns around and to his great surprise, he sees a girl stripping down to her underwear. The kid is transgender, a girl who identifies as a boy. So the young man went to the front office to complain, only to be told by an assistant principal that he had to tolerate undressing in front of the transgender student, and he also had to make it seem as natural as possible. The school said students who mentally identify as members of the opposite sex must be allowed to use whatever bathroom they desire. The young man was eventually given a choice. He could either use the nurse's office or he could be homeschooled. So look, the school district's response here is proof that resistance to this perverse indoctrination is futile. The child and his family are now suing the school. I'm Todd Stearns.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Think about tomorrow in the House.
They don't have the votes to pass this tomorrow. We believe that they need to start over.
That sounds like one member's opinion.
Start over, do this thing right.
Well, I'm a no right at the present moment.
We still haven't seen the movement we want.
This is really a defeat of Paul Ryan. I think he's going to have to give conservatives a seat at the table.
We're adding votes by the day. We're not losing votes, we're adding votes. And we feel like we're getting really, really close.
Sorry, the mic is off. Hey, Sandy Rios back with you. That, you know, you just listened to that. That was Mark Meadows, Sean Spicer, Paul Ryan. And I just, listening to Paul Ryan, he's saying we're adding votes every day. We're adding votes constantly. I know that that's not true. That's not true. So I've been making the case for a long time now that Paul Ryan, in spite of his innocent face and his nice family and his Wisconsin accent, who you want to believe him, is not an honest person. But anyway, that's an aside. What's going on? The Freedom Caucus went back to the White House, as I understand it, back to Capitol Hill. They've been negotiating. I think they were going to negotiate as long as it took last night. But we still don't know this morning, at least I don't, what happened. Rick Manning might, because he seems to know all of these things. He has great connections. He's the president of Americans for Limited Government. I've asked him to join us this morning. Good morning, Rick.
Hey, Sandy, how are you doing?
I'm good. All right, so what do you know about what's happened since the rest of us slept?
Well, I know at about 1 o'clock this morning, I had an email that indicated that that there weren't any breakthroughs at that point. But on the narrow issues that they're negotiating on, even if they get to yes, the bill as a whole is so terrible that it still isn't going to accomplish the basic mission of stripping out Obamacare, ripping it out by the roots. It still isn't going to change the architecture of health care that Obamacare put into place, which ensures that we're going to continue with rising health care costs. And so it doesn't do the basic stuff that people voted to get done when they voted to Republicans into office to get rid of Obamacare.
Rick, this is kind of off topic, but not really. I just am curious. Dr. Tom Price had a plan. He'd been talking about this for years. I've interviewed him a couple times on it. It's been a while, but he's a doctor. He was trying to fix, do a counter to Obamacare. Does this plan look anything like what Dr. Tom Price came up with?
If it did, you'd think that he'd be an advocate in the room. Or if it didn't, you'd think he'd be an advocate in the room trying to fix it. I think the problem is this, and this is a very Washington, D.C. problem. These guys are so stuck in terms of the rules that they've created for themselves for deciding how they can proceed with legislation. And I'm talking now about specifically budget reconciliation. They sit there and they say, oh, we can't do anything that doesn't deal specifically with taxes or the areas where there's direct spending. And so we can't deal with the regulations. So they ignore the fact that in the Obamacare Supreme Court decision, it was decided that the regulations and the taxes are inextricably intertwined. You can't do one without the other. And if they relied on the Supreme Court decision, they could basically do virtually everything they want to do under budget reconciliation. In fact, Paul Ryan, when he was running for vice president in 2012, said, using budget reconciliation, we can get 85% of Obamacare done. We can rip it out to 85%. And now they're telling us, oh, we can't really do anything because the rules won't let us. The truth is, Sandy, they can't do anything because they really don't want to.
And just to make it as clear as possible, reconciliation, that process would allow them to pass this with 51 votes in the Senate, right?
That's correct. And so it is the appeal of reconciliation is you don't have to go through filibuster with it.
Yep.
It's a one-time shot to get something done on the budget that is a 51-vote majority in the Senate. And in the case of, since Mike Pence is vice president, that means they really only need 50 with Mike Pence casting 51st vote.
All right, Rick, the thing that people are going to ask as they're listening this morning to you, and they've been listening to me, they can't comprehend why that nice Paul Ryan and those other leaders who are affiliated with many of their congressmen in various districts around the country, why wouldn't they want to get rid of Obamacare? Haven't they said repeatedly, this is what they're going to do, elect me and we will, repeal Obamacare? Really and truly, are you telling us that they don't want to repeal Obamacare? And if not, why not?
Well, if you remember way back in 2013, when Ted Cruz moved to defund Obamacare, he was talking about this being their last really great chance to do it because the Medicaid reimbursement, the Medicaid expansion hadn't gone into effect yet. And he made the case very persuasively that once there became a large number of people who were perceived as beneficiaries of Obamacare, it was going to get exponentially harder to replace. And he was right. The time to rip it out by the roots, the best time to do it was in 2013. But these same Republicans told us, well, we really don't have the votes to do this. This is not the right time, not the right time and place. We can't shut down. We don't want to continue to shut down the government over this. It's not worth the fight. And Ted Cruz was prophetic when he said that once and a fissure. As people started getting on the in the system, it would become much, much harder to then change the system, because those people would be perceiving, at least initially, that they were being thrown out of having health care. Let me disabuse you, your listeners, of one simple notion that's been pushed around, and that is that this concept that there's going to be tens of millions of people who are not going to have health care if Obamacare goes away, that is patently false. Right now, 11 million of those people are being compelled to have health care because of the individual mandate. And so you've got under the current system, which, in fairness, the Ryan bill does get rid of. And so when those people go away and they're no longer being compelled to buy health insurance, they're going to make a choice. They're going to get a choice of how they want to do health care. Do they want to write it out of their pocket? Do they want to, how do they want to get their health care? They're still going to get health care. They still have access to medicine. They're just not necessarily going to be forced into a government-mandated health insurance plan. There's a massive difference between health insurance and health care. Insurers are the ones who pay, who are a payment vehicle. That's all it is. Health care is the relationship between you and your doctor. Obamacare strips away that relationship, and the Ryan Care bill leaves intact the architecture that separates you from your doctor.
Yeah. I talked yesterday briefly about that great, at least it was to me great, that Texas Policy Council list of the problems with this bill, which I think helped kind of explain it. And we'll go to that in just a second. But because, since you mentioned Senator Cruz, I know I heard yesterday that he is introducing something that is supposedly going to make this bill maybe more palatable. What do you know about that?
Truth be told, I haven't been briefed in on that. The focus is on the Senate directly, and or on the House directly, and that's where I've spent my focus, because, quite honestly, some of the guys, and here's, we talked a lot about Senator Cruz and the health care debate, but I think the guy who's the hero of this debate is Mark Meadows. He's a North Carolina congressman, and Representative Meadows, he featured in the clip going into this segment. He's a guy who's been leading the effort against the Ryan Care bill, desperately trying to get changes to it that rip out a lot of that architecture that we've talked about that makes it so you're still going to be stuck into a federally mandated plan. He's the guy who, because he was a strong supporter of President Trump in North Carolina, a state that was under siege in terms of the Electoral College and was very, very important, he has a lot of personal capacity to talk to President Trump and say, wait a second, this isn't the way to go. And he's using every bit of that juice he might have to move the president towards a more market-based solution and away from the solution that's been presented as the only way to do it by Paul Ryan. And that's the big deal here, is Paul Ryan has basically said it's my way or the highway on this bill. And Meadows is attempting to, if you excuse the pun, Trump him by having the White House jump in order to make changes to the Ryan bill. So Mark Meadows is really the key guy on this in the House. If the House passes it, then it's a totally different situation in the Senate. It's going to get a little confusing because they don't have the votes in the Senate either. So it's going to get interesting on the Senate side if they do pass it. But let's hope they don't pass it in the House. Go back to the drawing board and come up with a bill that Republicans can support.
But you know, Rick, it's been cast even by Fox. Of course, I say even by Fox. I just spent the first segment bashing John Roberts because he annoys me so much. So I'm not exactly a fan, 100% of people that appear on Fox. So I should make that clear. But they're couching this as this is going to be a big defeat for Donald Trump. He put all of his eggs, and he says he's a great negotiator, but if he fails in the House with this vote on Thursday, it's going to prove that he's not what he said he was, et cetera. It's a big failure for Donald Trump, et cetera, et cetera. I don't understand why that has to be. I mean, I don't agree with that. Can't they go back to the well and do this again?
Well, here's the thing. I think Donald Trump understands this. The media is attempting to do that for a simple reason. If you cast things as being, if they're not done, it's apocalyptic. because you want eyeballs, you want to, you know, you want people to tune in. If it's not that, if it's not, you know, apocalyptic, then why should people care? So there's a little bit of a challenge in that regard. The truth is Donald Trump is a negotiator. And what Donald Trump knows is sometimes you have to walk away from the deal and then come back with fresh eyes to get it right. He also knows that you don't want to get a bad deal that you're stuck with forever. And that's the real debate right now. Is the Donald Trump is at this juncture has bought the idea that through regulatory changes and that HHS would do, that Dr. Tom Price would do at HHS, and a third way, which is, you know, once the Republicans get 60 in the Senate, then they can really do all the stuff that needs to be done right now. And that's the ultimate thing that he's been sold. And that's what Representative Meadows is trying to disabuse him of. It's a false narrative because, A, HHS cannot strip away regulations that have underlying statutes supporting them. The next president will just rewrite the regulations. And secondly, Republicans have never in the history of the filibuster had a filibuster-proof majority in Senate. Never, not once. And to try to fool ourselves that somehow magically in 2018, when they have done virtually nothing in the Senate, that there's going and would pass a bill that falls far short of approval on health care, which would have health care rates continue to go up, that somehow the Senate's going to be, Republicans would be rewarded in the Senate with 60 votes is, I think I'm going to see unicorns and flying outside of my window before that happens.
Rick, you've said that Mark Meadows is a hero, and I agree with you. In fact, I shared the piece that you wrote about that. Mark Meadows' Ryan Care opposition is a profile in courage, and I totally agree. Dave Brad, Jim Jordan, the other members of the Freedom Caucus. But the question begs, of course, to those that can't possibly follow this like you and I are. It appears from the outside and from the way the media is portraying it that these guys are really undermining Donald Trump. This is his first big initiative. And if you don't vote for this, you are undermining this president. I'd like your response to that.
Let's be clear. Donald Trump did not run for president to do Paul Ryan's bidding. He ran for president to drain the swamp. And Paul Ryan is a swamp creature. So it's a little disconcerting that Paul Ryan and Ryan's Priebus and President Trump's chief of staff are, for all intents and purposes, seem to be calling the shots on this a little bit. Now, I would agree with you that there are those who really are afraid of Donald Trump as an outsider. And one of the best ways to neuter him is to kill his brand. And if you're going to kill his brand, wrap this Ryan Care bill around it. They're already trying to call it Trump Care. Wrap this while he's somewhat naive about Washington, D.C. politics, and wrap it around his brand and make him have that anchor around his neck so he's stuck in the swamp and unable to get out, and then the swamp owns him. I said something the other day that if you surround yourself with swamp rats, it's really difficult not to get a bunch of algae on you. And that, at some levels, what's happened. It's a challenge. Donald Trump has attempted to do something which is extremely difficult to do. And I'm giving him a pretty wide pass in terms of blame. Because in talking to him directly, he said he thinks it's not a great bill.
Yeah.
So I know that for a fact. And I'm hoping that his good friend, Representative Meadows, will be able to shine light on it in such a way that President Trump sees it for what it is. And what it is a big trap that kills his brand.
Rick, we have to go. But Rick is with Americans for Limited Government. He's an absolute treasure in Washington. And just a major watchman on the wall. And Rick, I always appreciate your efforts. And I just guess the bottom line is these guys who are trying to stop this are the real friends of Donald Trump and this president and the things that he really did promise on the campaign trail, and that the swamp creatures are of a different breed. And so, all right, Rick, great to talk to you. Thank you so much. And we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Sandy. Take care.
Oh, yeah, I will. Thanks. Coming up next, Devin Nunez.
American Family Radio, impacting lives.
I just had a marriage dissolve 2 years ago after 28 years. But thank God, because of AFR, I've been able to provide stable, consistent, strong Bible teaching to each of my three children. And in spite of a terrible marriage with their father, they've been well grounded in the truth of God's Word. They've been inspired by Christian music provided by AFR and our teachings and from the books that we get and materials. It has been a great source of encouragement, a great source of inspiration. I just want to say thank you so much for providing the very basic foundational principles that our country needs to get back to.
Ensure that we impact even more lives by partnering with us during our three-day share-a-thon starting April 4th. Listener-supported American Family Radio, boldly standing for truth.
Exploring the Word is all about Jesus, because Jesus is on every page of the Bible, but sometimes people don't see him.
Bert Harper of Exploring the Word.
So we're taking a microscope and finding Jesus in each book of the Bible. He's there. And Alex and myself on Exploring the Word, we're going to try to bring that out, and it will be a blessing.
Join Bert and Alex each weekday at 3 Central on American Family Radio.
Consider serving with Friendships. It's an all-volunteer ministry providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished here at home and around the world. We're now taking applications. If you're available to serve without pay, you can be part of the crew reaching out to help people in need. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
Revival has been described as an extraordinary movement of the Holy Spirit producing extraordinary results. Isn't that what we need in America? Well, by God's grace, it can happen.
Buddy Smith, Senior Vice President of American Family Association.
Jonathan Edwards was a preacher during the First Great Awakening in America. In his account of what he saw God do, he commented, "The assembly were in tears while the word was preached. Some weeping with sorrows and distress, others with joy and love, others with concern for the souls of their neighbors." If only God in His mercy would do that great work again.
If you have a heart to see the Lord bring revival to America, we encourage you to gather with us at Fusion, the Heart Cry for Revival Conference in late April in Asheville, North Carolina. To register or to find out more, go to heartcryforrevival.org.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Yesterday, on the first anniversary of a jihadist attack in Brussels, what sure looks like another one was mounted in London. A British-born driver tied to so-called violent extremism killed two people and wounded 20 more by mowing them down on Westminster Bridge, then murderously stabbed a police officer outside Parliament. Although others have been arrested, investigators insist the as-yet-unidentified perpetrator acted alone. They have belatedly acknowledged that he was likely inspired by Islamist ideology. Official reluctance to connect the available dots is common in the aftermath of such events. The practice of downplaying, if not actually dissembling about, the danger posed by Sharia supremacists in our midst, however, risks getting more of us killed. Yesterday's attack underscores why we must not bring in still more such jihadists into our country. If you agree, join us at immigrationpause.org. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
In order to keep you all fully updated on what's happening with this investigation, today I briefed the president on the concerns that I had about incidental collection and how it relates to President-elect Trump and his transition team and the concerns that I have. As I said earlier, there'll be more information, hopefully by Friday. The NSA is cooperating very, very well. And lastly, I'll say that the reports that I was able to see did not have anything to do with Russia or the Russia investigation or any tie to the Trump team. And with that, I'll love to take a couple questions if you have them.
Chairman, I have a quick question. Why is it appropriate for you to brief President Trump, given it's his own administration or campaign associates that are a part of this investigation?
Because what I saw has nothing to do with Russia and nothing to do with the Russia investigation. Has everything to do with possible surveillance activities, and the president needs to know that this in, these intelligence reports are out there, and I have a duty to tell him that.
Chairman, you'd be drawing conclusions before it was completed, Chairman.
I'm not drawing any conclusion. I'm just telling the president what exists in intelligence reports.
Were the subjects of the surveillance under FISA orders?
It appears so. I don't want to get too much into those details, but these were intelligence reports, and it brings up a lot of concerns about, you know, whether things were properly minimized or not. But I will tell you, I've only seen some. It's in the dozens. But we don't have the full scope of all the intelligence reports that were produced, or who ordered the unmasking of additional names.
By the way, he's not going to be with us in person. I ran out of time to explain that. But this segment, I want you to hear his full presser, almost all of it, in front of the White House yesterday. Because you're not going to hear this unless you go back on YouTube or look at it. You may not hear it anywhere else. I want you to hear, because he says more than what the reports, of course, have time to really report. On that thing that he just said, he keeps saying it didn't. What he found has nothing to do with Russia. Well, the reason that's significant is then why in the world were operatives of the Trump campaign caught and their names released and disseminated through intelligence circles? What was this all about? What was this so-called surveillance? And it was a FISA order, which means a FISA order has to be signed off on by the Justice Department, a.k.a. Loretta Lynch. A FISA order is a huge thing, not just anybody. It's not a small thing to get a FISA order. So if Loretta Lynch actually signed off on a FISA order that involved conversations that Donald Trump happened to be in during the time when he's a candidate, there's no way that this is my idea. I'm telling you, there's no way that President Barack Obama would not know about that, that they wouldn't say, hey, well, this is kind of sensitive. Does anybody remember that Watergate was all about this? Watergate was about a few burglars breaking into the DNC headquarters. And that's what caused President Nixon to have to resign. That's what caused all that scandal. That's what caused Chuck Colson to go to prison. This is much worse if true. This is much worse. All right, Devin Nunez goes on. I want you to hear what he has to say.
Are you saying the surveillance, if it wasn't related to Russia or anything like that, are you saying that it was political surveillance of political opponents, as the president has suggested in his tweets?
What I've read bothers me, and I think it should bother the president himself and his team, because I think some of it seems to be inappropriate. But like I said, until we get all the information to the committee, it's hard to really say until we see it in its totality.
Mr. Chairman,
yes, sir.
We knew that there was some incidental collection, because Lieutenant General Michael Flynn was caught up talking with Sergei Kislyak.
Right.
Does this go beyond that, and does this qualify as the sort of wiretapping that the president was tweeting about?
Well, it definitely goes beyond what happened to General Flynn. Now, of course, we don't actually know yet officially what happened to General Flynn. We just know that his name leaked out, but we don't know how it was picked up yet. That's one of the things that we asked for in our March 15th letter, was for the NSA, CIA, and FBI to get us all the unmasking that was done. And I'll tell you, NSA is being cooperative, but you know, so far the FBI has not told us whether or not they're going to respond to our March 15th letter, which is now a couple weeks old.
And again, does this seem to describe what the president was talking about? What he was talking about, quote, wiretapping, which they then said was broader surveillance?
What I've read seems to me to be some level of surveillance activity, perhaps legal, but I don't know that it's right, and I don't know that the American people would be comfortable with what I've read. But let us get all the reports.
The president was correct in what he tweeted.
It is possible.
Was the president personally involved? It is possible. And the nugget of that was the NSA has been fully cooperative. The FBI has not. All right, he goes on. Devin Nunes, chairman of the U.S. House Permanent Select Committee. Let's listen.
Yes, sir. The president said that President Obama tapped his phone.
That did not happen. I've said this for many, many weeks, including a couple days after, in front of the press. That never happened.
Did President Obama order any kind of surveillance of the president?
We don't know. We don't know who sent the taskings. If the taskings were changed into what went into these intelligence reports, but we're going to try to find that out.
Permission to put out this information today. Did the Justice Department give you the okay to talk about this?
Justice Department doesn't have anything to do with this. This is information that was brought to me that I thought the president needed to know about incidental collection, where the president himself and others in the Trump transition team were clearly put into intelligence reports that ended up at this White House and across a whole bunch of other agencies. And I thought it was important for the president to know this. That's why I briefed the speaker this morning, and I came down here as soon as I could.
How many people are you seeing in these reports, and do any of them currently work at the White House for Mr. Trump?
I don't want to get into the specifics of it because, look, I was only able to see a few dozen, of which I think a lot of it does have foreign intelligence value. So let's not.
Reports or people?
There were dozens of reports that I was able to see. That we're hoping that the NSA, FBI, CIA will provide, because I know they exist, so I want them to provide them to our committee so that all the members have an opportunity to see what I've been shown. I think the president is concerned, and he should be. I think he'd like to see these reports. And I hopefully when we get them, hopefully they'll get them to the White House also.
Do you believe the president appropriately used the word wiretapping? Was it used correctly in his tweets based on the information that you have seen?
Well, look, I think the wiretapping, if you use it generally, like the president has said, he clearly, used it differently than what I think a lot of people took it, which was, did Obama actually wiretap Trump Tower, which we know didn't happen. I think the president's been pretty clear on that.
But the physical act of wiretapping, do you see anything in the information?
And I said that on day two after.
Mr. Chairman, can you rule out the possibility that senior Obama administration officials were involved in this?
No, we cannot.
Can you rule out the possibility that senior Obama officials or the president himself was involved in this? Can you rule that out? No, I cannot. Devin Nunes. And also, you notice the reporters keep trying to go back to the semantics. So was Donald Trump right when he said wiretapped? He said that the President Obama tapped his phones. And so they're hung up on that because they want a headline that says Devin Nunes says President Trump was wrong, that President Obama did not tap his phones. And of course, it's much deeper than that. And that is just a silly point upon which to be hanging their hats. But that's what they're hanging them on. I want to tell you a couple of things. By the way, we'll put this entire presser on our Facebook page so that you can watch the whole thing, because I don't think I'm going to have time to play the rest of it. We'll put it on there, and you can watch it for yourself and see what you think. Adam Schiff, who was the vice president of the Congressional Intelligence Committee, was very upset because Devin Nunes did not talk to him about this and went right to the White House to report to the president what had come to his attention. It was a whistleblower who brought this information to Devin Nunes. I don't know if it's one or more, but he didn't go through Adam Schiff. My best sources say the reason for that was because those whistleblowers knew that their names would be leaked and there would be hell to pay. And this is where we're finding this. People become the target so easily. So I'm sure Devin Nunes is protecting his sources on this because he doesn't trust Adam Schiff, and for good reason. Another friend of mine just wrote this morning that he served with Congressman Schiff in the California legislature, and he said, we called him Shifty Schiff. Let me assure you, he will do everything possible to protect Obama while acting in public like a moderate, serious guy. It's all an act. He is, in reality, a leftist ideologue who will try to do everything possible to discredit the whistleblowers. We just need to remember how hard he worked to sabotage the Benghazi hearings. He poo-pooed the idea that the military could have gotten there in time. He also attacked witnesses who testified that there was political interference with rescue efforts. American men died because of the incompetence of Hillary and her State Department, but it was Schiff's role to cover for Hillary as he assumed Hillary was going to be the Democratic presidential nominee. And my sources tell me he was hoping to be named CIA or FBI director had she won. Now, that, of course, is speculation. He's heard that. We don't know about that. But I'm just telling you, this is opinion. This is a personal, private opinion. But this is someone who worked with Adam Schiff. And you're going to hear a lot from him today accusing Devin Nunes of something nefarious when Devin Nunes is the chairman of the committee. He has every right to do what he did. And then this is an article that this is really dreadful, honestly. This is from Breitbart. It actually came out in September of 2016. And here's what it is. Exposed FBI Director James Comey's Clinton Foundation connection. And it says, FBI Director James Comey's professional history and relationships shows that his personal and professional relationships all undisclosed as he announced the Bureau would not prosecute Clinton, reinforced by partisan concerns that he may have politicized the criminal probe. These concerns focus on millions of dollars that Comey accepted from a Clinton Foundation defense contractor. Comey's former membership on a Clinton Foundation corporate partners board and his surprising financial relationship with his brother Peter Comey, who works at the law firm that does the Clinton Foundation's taxes. And then it goes through all of this. It says that Comey earned $6 million in 1 year alone from Lockheed Martin, and that same year, Lockheed Martin became a Clinton Foundation donor. According to Lockheed Martin, it's also a member of the American Chamber of Commerce in Egypt, which paid Bill Clinton $250,000 to deliver a speech in 2010. The point is that the Lockheed Martin people are obviously in favor of the Clinton Foundation. They wouldn't be giving a lot of money to it, and FBI director before he was FBI director, and even after, was still receiving money from Lockheed Martin. In fact, it says in this article that Comey promised during the hearing that he would not, I need to read this exactly. When President Obama nominated Comey to become FBI director in 2013, Comey promised the United States Senate that he would recuse himself on all cases involving former employers. But Comey earned $6 million in 1 year alone from Lockheed Martin. So that's one part of it. And then Lockheed Martin became a Clinton Foundation donor that very year. I believe there's enough evidence there, or at least enough stuff. We'll put that article on our Facebook page, too. Again, it's a Breitbart article dated September 10th of 2016, exposed FBI Director James Comey's Clinton Foundation connection. I think we have a problem, and I think that a serious problem. I think I've said that before. But when you have Devin Nunes, who's the head of the House Intelligence Committee, having a presser because he's gotten information from whistleblowers that the then-candidate Donald Trump and his team may, looks very likely, were surveilled, and it's not clear that the president of the United States at the time didn't have something to do with this. This is serious. This is, again, what brought down President Nixon, only it's much worse. And so it's interesting to me that media would be poo-pooing this. Because, and it would also, when you think about it, that the FBI Director Comey in his testimony on Monday was not so concerned about leaks or exposing people in the White House, but he was, you know, all about this Russian connection, alleged, with the Trump campaign, for which there is no proof. Even the people under Obama said there's no proof of this. So this is really, it's not hard to say there's something wrong here. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.